Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paul Hawksby.
And Andy Jacobs.
And welcome once again to the H&J Daily, the best bits of this afternoon's show. Well, we were joined by Matthew Syed, weren't we? He's got a new book out.
He's brilliant, isn't he, Matthew?
Yeah.
He's always got an interesting take on life.
And thought-provoking stuff. Mm. We also spoke to Ainsley Harriott.
Yes, brilliant in his own way.
Yeah, different. A very different guest, but nonetheless very entertaining.
What was he like?
Well, he was good, I thought. We talked about takeaways and Arsenal, but not necessarily in that order. And we had a bit of a chat about various things.
Oh, various things.
Yeah. Here it all is. Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Andy.
Is that to hire or to buy? That's to hire, is it?
I would imagine, yeah. They sort of rent them for the stay. Oh, well, we'll find out later on. Johnny Fordham's had a good look round. He's out there for the sun. Yeah, £130. Head to the hotel's pillow gallery and pick your tailor-made bedding.
Oh, lovely.
You can have fiberglass balls or run-of-the-mill foam. Whatever you prefer.
Well, yeah. I'll go run-of-the-mill foam.
Okay, fair enough.
And well done to England. That's probably their best session of the whole five matches.
Oh, I know you don't agree, but don't you think the Australians maybe just are a little bit...
No, I think they're incredibly motivated.
They've won the Ashes, though, Andy.
It doesn't matter. They haven't won a series here since 2001. They want to
win. When did they last retain the Ashes here?
At the same time.
Well, exactly. They've retained the Ashes in England.
They've all been at points to say, you know, how much they care about
You can
this.
Think that as much as you like, but when you're in a situation where you've got to be your most competitive...
They don't want to lose this game.
They don't want to lose it, but are they inspired enough and motivated enough to win it?
Probably, but we'll wait and see.
Yeah.
Yeah. Talking of extra bits, 90% of people polled so they'd happily become a cyborg. Did you see this?
A cyborg. Oh, sorry.
Not a sideboard. It's cyborg.
Okay.
Part human, part robot.
Oh, yeah.
90%
I know what a cyborg is.
Yeah, they'd have cyber devices implanted to boost their abilities. And I was thinking, I could do with a couple of extra gigabytes of memory.
You could, don't ask me. It'd be fantastic.
I'd be brilliant on that. Yeah. It'd be perfect. And best set of initials I've ever come across in the Times wedding announcements today.
Yeah.
This is incredible. Monsieur AGMGMGP Lamarche is marrying Miss...
Wow.
I know, from the pavilion end, it's AGMGMP Lamarche.
AGMGMP.
Yeah, AGMGMGP.
GMGP.
So AGMG...
Mansfield 1, Northampton.
AGMGMGP.
Okay, AGMGMGP. Okay, yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 7 initials.
I know, Antoine is his first name.
Okay, you haven't got the rest of them there, not put the
no,
full name in.
No, they didn't put the full name in.
Have you not looked it up?
It would have cost a fortune.
Yeah, imagine that if he became a professional footballer.
That's a good idea, really.
On the back of your shirt. Yeah.
Well done. And,
that's got to be a record, 7
brilliant
initials.
Brilliant thing on Roy Race, Roy of the Rovers. Mm. It's his 65th anniversary. And they've discovered, you knew this, I didn't know this, but in October 1977, basically Roy discovers VAR. Manchester Rovers striker scored yet another goal. The referee and linesman discuss whether it was offside. And there's a giant screen in the stadium, which was pretty ahead of its time, even in 1977. So they all stand there looking at it, and Roy makes them decide. You know,
somebody found it on, found it in an old comic and put it on social media a little while ago, and it did the rounds.
Apparently, there was also a pompous fool called Davis Mellory who came up with a terrible handball idea in the strip.
Davis Mellory.
Yeah.
What a good name.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Hopefully we're going to get the guys in from the news. They've got Roy the Rovers is in the news because it's back. There's a new one.
Mm.
And it's got one of Roy's younger relatives and stuff involved.
Well, so it's a nice idea, isn't it?
It's Roy Race for the new era.
That's good.
Okay, well, we'll see if we can get him in.
And Pep, we call on the show, we call if you talk about yourself in the third party.
Mm. Third person.
Oh, yeah. If you say, like, Andy Jacobs thinks this, that and the other, it sounds ridiculous. Well, it's called a Lennox Lewis.
It is.
Lennox was brilliant. Lennox Lewis thinks that Lennox can win this fight, you know, and all this stuff. So Pep Guardiola is the latest person to do a Lennox Guardiola. He's talking about the doctor that operated on
Laporte yeah.
and saved his career. And he says, if Dr. Cougar hadn't appeared in my life, Pep Guardiola would have retired from playing. Why don't you say I? Well, you say I would have retired from playing.
That passage comes from his book. It comes from his book.
Yeah, and that's no excuse, is
well,
it?
I don't know if it's told in a sort of first-person style. Is it?
Well, it's a quote
it's a
from
ghosted
him.
Autobiography, isn't it?
Guardiola wrote, if Dr. Cougar hadn't appeared in my life,
right.
Pep Guardiola would have retired from playing.
Okay, fair enough.
I suggest just say I.
All right.
It's
then,
better, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, all right. I'm getting really upset about nothing.
Well,
there,
I like getting upset about nothing.
I've got some bad news for Tim Vickery. Bad news. A new species of electric eel has been discovered in South America. It produces 200 more volts than the previous highest. 860 volts. That's going to be a bit of a shock for Nigel Botherway and Fisherman's Blues when he goes to take it out of the net, wasn't it, really?
It was
a shocker, literally.
Oh, I watched Bob and Paul Whitehouse's fishing programme.
Gone Fishing, yeah, good.
It's such a one. It's my favourite programme.
It's finished now. It was the second series.
I know,
done,
but
right?
I'm working through the second series, and honestly, if you haven't seen it, I just think it's the most lovely bit of television I've seen for a long time.
Yeah.
It treats you with a bit of intelligence. It looks beautiful. Mm. It's got a nice pace about it. It's gentle and it's fun. It's really interesting as well.
It's an excellent series. And they'll be back to do more. Who knows?
If you think I've got a problem about getting worked up about nothing, what about this bloke that wrote to the Daily Star today? Why do ITV1 and GMB go through so much to promote Dame Joan Collins as being on at 8:10, only to start their interview at 8:24? Cares.
15 minutes of his life he'll never get back waiting for Joan Collins.
Well, it was Piers Morgan going on about Fireman Sam, but so what?
Yeah.
Poor TV, he says.
Well, fair enough. Well, that, blimey, that is pushing it a bit. That puts your Pep Guardiola into perspective.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
This is Paul Hawksby and Andy Jacobs here on Talk Sports, and I think sort of part of watching sport at home, very much the fabric of that, is the Great British Takeaway.
Oh, absolutely.
Isn't it?
No question.
Now, you may not be aware, but there is a glitzy event that takes place every year.
The Takeaway Oscars?
Well, kind of.
Okay.
The British Takeaway Awards 2019, they're going to be celebrating the best takeaways across the country. Categories include Best Takeaway in Britain, Best Delivery Driver in Britain, Takeaway Chef in Britain. And who better to guide us through it than Ainsley Harriott? Hi, Ainsley.
Hey,
how are you?
Good afternoon, boys. How you doing, Paul, Andy? Well?
Yeah we're good, thanks.
Fantastic. You gave that a lovely intro, and isn't it amazing how life has changed and how many people do actually like a takeaway now?
I mean, it's some of the findings are fantastic. We love this one. In the research, apparently, one in five people have cheered when there's a knock at the door and the takeaway arrives. Cheered.
They're the kind of people who've got onto the Just Eat app and they've followed it. They've followed the bike. We're always coming around the estate now, always going around the roundabout. What are you going that way for? Oh, yeah. Oh, that must have been a bus stop. And they come back and then they come in there. Oh, I think it's so wonderful, isn't it? That's and they say, true. Yeah, take the plates out the oven now. They're here. Yeah. Open the wine.
I mean, it was just a staple, wasn't it? It was the pizza, the kebab, or the fish and chips. But I mean, there's so much. You can practically get anything ordered now, can't you?
Oh, absolutely. As I say, you know, most of the apps that we go on to now, that's our lifestyle. It has changed. Less and less are actually phoning up now. It's almost like we're non-commutative, you know. So it's wonderful where we're able to talk. But basically, you could just go onto the app, you could order what you want, and there's hundreds of varieties, whether you're going for Japanese, Caribbean, Mexican, Indian, or your classic fish and chips. It's all there, and quite often it's with or without. out. You know, I don't like this, I don't like that. You can start stripping things out of your, of what you don't and don't like. You know, my son often, when he comes and plays a bit of five-a-side football on a Wednesday night with his mates, he comes back and we have a burger. And he said, tell him, Dad, I don't want the onion, I don't want the pickle, I don't want this, but I want that and I want that. You know, it's fun. And you can have that all now.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
And it is a family treat, isn't it? I think that's, you know, because you can't do it every night. You wouldn't want takeaway every night. But no. I think, you know, to treat it like that, I think kids love it, don't they? Love the pizza arriving, as you said.
Although, tracking. Andy, you're talking about every night. One of the other things as well is Christmas dinner. 12% of the people who responded to this have their Christmas dinner as a takeaway.
I'm not entirely sure that's a good thing.
Well, you're going to say that because you're a family man and Mrs. won't have it, you know. But, I mean, the reality is a lot of people just can't be bothered to cook.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's the frustration. Sometimes they don't know how. But you know what's interesting, guys, is what you order. Before, it was something very plain and ordinary because you didn't want to be too experimental, too extravagant. But now we've upped the ante. We all know what a jus is, you know. People talk about the reduction and you feel a little bit more comfortable and it's actually reflected of even when you go to restaurants now. And to be able to what I like about this award is that you're actually able to say to people, thank you for cooking my food and thank you for delivering my food. And I love the last one, for the first time ever this year, the takeaway lovers and Just Eat fans alike can enter to become Britain's number one takeaway fan.
Oh, right.
You know, so you can either vote for your mate or you can vote for yourself. You know what I mean? And guess what? You can win. As I said, you can win all these wonderful things. You can win free food for a year every month, and then you can, wherever you restaurant or takeaway you've nominated, you can actually go to that destination for a holiday. And I think it'd be great if it's Vietnam or Marrakesh, but can you imagine if it's Skeggy or something like that?
Is the awards do a dinner or is it takeaway?
Well, I just wondered if a bloke rocks up, and rather you're getting your kind of chicken in a sauce, they say, who ordered this, who ordered that? So you'll get your individual meal. And the best delivery driver, if he's going to be 5 minutes late, isn't he? They're going to say, and the winner is Brian from Luton. Oh, sorry, he's got caught in the one-way system. It'll be about 5 minutes.
He's not quite here yet. Fantastic.
Good stuff. Now, did enjoy your Caribbean series recently.
Thanks very much. Very good.
I went to Grenada earlier this year, and one of the places you featured was a kind of expat lad called Brian, who owns BB's Crabac. He is quite a character, Brian, isn't he? He's the kind of manager slash host.
Yeah, he looks out of it, though, doesn't he?
Well, I think he enjoys himself. He throws himself into the role, a bit like Peter Langham used to do. Throws himself into the role of host. The night I was there, I had a good chat with him about football and cricket and stuff. And no, he was good value.
That's a good place.
That looked like fun, didn't it? Cooking on the beach all around the Caribbean. Tough gig.
I know. Tell me about it. Walking on, you know, a bit of sand between your toes, that's what you want in the middle of January, don't you? But it was, you know, Grenada, what a fantastic place. A lot of expats out there too, Paul. I've got to say, a lot of expats out there, and they enjoy their life. You know, some people end up, they wanted to cruise around the Caribbean, and they stop off in Grenada, and they end up cruising. They sell their boat off, and they just live there. They love the lifestyle, and it is very relaxed. It's conducive to kind of, you know, reserving your life, actually, or preserving your life, if you like.
Yeah. So we should talk a bit of Arsenal. How are you feeling about life? Things are looking up a bit, I think, from the last time we spoke.
I think so. I think, you know, if you're an Arsenal fan and you see what he's done there, this is the first season where it's, you know, he can lay down, you know, what he considers to be his best team. And, you know, he's bringing those type of players in. He's let, I think, about 13 go. Half of them, we don't even know their names because they're part of the kind of young academy and stuff like that. But he's very much stamping his authority on the club and saying, this is the way we're going to play. And if you look over the years, the fact is, and Guardiola came in, or whether there's Klopp that came into Liverpool, or indeed, you know, you guys at Spurs, you know what happens. You bring your manager in, you've got to give them two or three seasons just to, you know, put things in place, if you like.
As long as it's going in the right direction. It's easy to do that if it is, like at Arsenal. You can see them giving Emery more time because he's showing signs. But it's hard, isn't it, when if it's not going well, in the end, you have to get rid of the manager.
I know, but quite often, as you know, Andy, it's those teams down the bottom. They bring people in and they haven't got a chance. You know, they're already struggling and some of them can turn it around. And quite often, they can only turn it around for a season and a half. Poor Chris Hughton's a typical example there, isn't he? You know, but that, you know, people want to play that kind of expansive football now. They all want to be, they want to get the next Wolves manager, if you like, that comes in and just kind of, 1 minute you're in the Championship, next minute you're playing in the Europa League and all that type of stuff. It doesn't happen all the time. It's difficult. And then, as we saw what happened with Burnley, you know, it can affect your whole season and you could go down if you're not careful.
Yeah, yeah. That's true.
What else are you up to at the moment, Ainsley?
Well, you know, after doing this awards and talking to people about it, which I think is a fantastic opportunity, I'll be off to the Mediterranean to make another series and looking at different foods and going to an interesting place. I want to go to place like Jordan and Tel Aviv, as well as your Spains and your Marrakeshes and places like that, just to kind of, you know, have a look at different types of food. And, you know, some of those places I haven't been to before. So I'm going into it with fresh eyes and genuine excitement. So I'm looking forward to that.
Strictly's back, of course. It bring back memories of your time.
Oh, yeah, me hips hurt, me toes hurt, everything hurt. All those people go, Strictly, I said, shut up.
And I suppose we should ask you about Ready, Steady, Cook.
How can you bring it back without you?
We're not happy about this.
Yeah, it's like bringing back Coronation Street without Ken Barlow.
I know, it's strange, isn't it? And everyone's been going on about it and people are arguing about it. My mate... Of course, Greg James, and he's been going on about it too. Do you know what, lads? It's such a brilliant format. It is a great, great format. 20 minutes real cooking time. We don't normally have programmes like that on TV. We always have something dissolves into something else. You see the ingredients and half an hour later it's all done and it's all fancy. This is real cooking in real time. And if Ryland does it well and he allows the chefs to express themselves, then, you know, I think they're onto a winning formula there. I did it for a long time and I did it, hopefully I did it well enough that people do remember it. And I think that's what's happening now. So, you know, a bit of a reputation. So he's got to live up to that. And I'm sure he will do and bring new chefs on because, you know, the world's changing and we've got to move with it.
Absolutely.
Very gracious.
It's very gracious of you. Yeah. Ainsley, always a pleasure. Good luck with the awards. I know you're one of the judges and we will catch up with you soon. Take care.
And love to Chelsea and love to Spurs, boys.
You don't mean love to Spurs. Or Chelsea. You don't. Oh, you've got your fingers crossed.
Oh, that hurt.
Just take it easy.
God bless.
See you later. Ainsley Harriott there. On the British Takeaway Awards, 12% of people, Christmas dinner, takeaway. Valentine's Day, 33%.
Yeah, that's
not cooked but tonight.
It's not takeaway turkey plus all the trimmings, is it, for Christmas dinner?
Luckily, in all the excitement, we're told 93% of us are able to keep our drinks from spilling over. But for 4%, it's too much for them. Some people pull a muscle. 4% get injured running to the front door for their takeaway. I mean, it's great, but take a long, hard look at yourselves, folks, really.
What an injury that would be.
Yeah, imagine that, phoning up the gaffer. Anyway, it's Paul Hawksby, Andy Jacobs here on Talk Sport.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from Talk Sport.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
108 for two, England at the moment. Stokes just out there after Burns went pretty cheaply, and Root is there on 37. But joining us in the studio now, a man that we first spoke to a kind of lifetime ago for him, before he was a journalist, before he was an author, he was still Britain's number one table tennis player. Matthew Syed, of course, since then, written extensively in the press, and a number of best-selling books. And his latest book, Rebel Ideas, The Power of Diverse Thinking, is out now, and he joins us in the studio. Good to see
it's
you.
It's great to be. You know how much I love this show.
You're very kind, Matthew. Very,
it's
very
really
kind.
Lovely to be with you.
Yeah, it's it
doesn't well, we like your books.
It's just a bit of a mutual. Yeah, but yeah, it does feel like a lifetime ago. So you were still a professional sportsman when we first ever
yeah, so
spoke
you guys
to.
Were just saying, weren't we? You started in 2001. Mm. I played my last Olympics in 2000, Commonwealth Games 2002. So I think I probably came on your show in 2001.
Yeah,
we talked about table tennis and. You probably were asking, what will you do when you retire? I was like, I have absolutely no idea.
Did you know where it was going?
I kind of thought, you know, it's difficult. This is one of the interesting things about sport. You peak early in life.
Mm.
You're in your 20s and you reach the absolute zenith of your potential and talent. And then if you retire at, say, the average age of a footballer retirement was, what, 32, 33, same for table tennis, then you have this entire lifetime. And it's a massive challenge to your identity because you start sport young. You build up this following, this sense of who you are as a table tennis player, as a footballer. You get a bit of acclaim. And then suddenly when you finish, it's not just that you lose the money. It's not just that you lose the thing that you were doing every day, but suddenly your identity disappears. I'm no longer a table tennis player. Mm. I'm no longer a footballer. Footballers, as you know, they have massive transition problems.
Yeah.
And I think I did struggle a bit emotionally, psychologically, because I was missing it so much. It was such a big part of who I was. Mm. But then eventually found the Times as a columnist, sports section. So that was a okay transition. Then the book writing, and I've really enjoyed the journey.
Yeah, the latest book is fascinating. Rebel Ideas. I mean, we'll talk in a bit more detail, but kind of give us a kind of overview of the book and what it's about.
I tell you, one thing that made me think about writing this book was, I don't know if you guys ever get invited to give talks at schools.
I've done one at one of my old schools. Yeah,
right. Mm. So you get, you're thinking, never, ever been invited.
Don't worry, Matthew, I never get invited to do anything.
I'll get my old school to send you an invite.
But something about my personality. Yeah,
go on. But so I go in and take this A-level media studies class. And I went in and I said, look, why don't we do a practical thing? Let's pretend we're editors at the Times and we're trying to decide what's going to be the front page story tomorrow, the splash, the photo caption. And I saw all these diverse individuals with probably great ideas, but nobody put their hand up.
Mm.
And I thought, this is odd, because I've come in and it's like Dead Poets Society. I thought I was really inspirational as a speaker. And no one's put. And then I realised that the reason they hadn't put their hand up is they were worried about saying something, that this external speaker, this guest, this VIP would say, that's a terrible idea.
Mm.
And then I asked the teacher, maybe you could get the ball rolling. And she said, no way. I'm not going to start. And I think, you can have diverse ideas that aren't expressed. And I think that young people who have the courage to say, I think this, they might get challenged, but then they can refine their opinion in the light of what they hear.
Yeah.
I think that builds resilience. I think it builds creativity. And if we can create groups where people express what they think and they're sufficiently and in a meaningful way diverse, I think you get much better outcomes.
Well, the book is about diversity, not but just racial diversity.
A different type of diversity.
Yeah, you call it cognitive diversity.
Right.
That is the key to it, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I think diversity gets a bad name because people think it's just a box-ticking exercise about race or gender or social class or sexual orientation. And yet, if you think about it, I'm mixed race. I'm half Pakistani, half Welsh. Unusual combination.
Yes.
But the fact that I'm half Pakistani, half Welsh, say I was somebody who was trying to help design an aircraft engine. My experience of being mixed race isn't going to help me, is it? Realize if I tweak the design of the engine in this way, is it going to make it more aerodynamically efficient? So I think you bring the wrong kind of diverse, or take the BBC. You know, they said we need to have, we're too white, we need people from different racial, gender, and all. But they came in and they were also from upper middle class backgrounds with the same basic worldview. Mm. They weren't really getting the kind of diversity that was going to help them with their mission. Yeah. So I think we need to think about diversity in a more sophisticated way.
But people, organisations do like having like-minded people all working together. Right.
It's that old, there's that phrase, isn't it? Birds of a feather flock together. You know, yeah. when you look to employ, you tend to...
CIA.
You tend to employ people very similar to you from very similar backgrounds with similar outlooks.
Exactly. And I think one of the reasons for this is we're attracted to people who think exactly the same as us because they reflect our opinions and our thoughts and our prejudices. It makes us feel smarter. It's validating. But of course, if there's a really difficult problem and you're surrounded by a group of people who think exactly the same way, you're agreeing with each other. You're probably becoming more confident about your perspective, but it might be fundamentally wrong.
Yeah.
And one of the things actually that made me think about this book was joining a football committee. It's called the Technical Advisory Board.
Mm-hmm.
And it advises Gareth Southgate, the men's coach, Dan Ashworth, who used to be the head of the women's and men's teams, Phil Neville, Martin Glenn, the former chief executive, about performance. And I got to the meeting and there was, alongside me, Manoj Badal, who is a high-tech startup guy, also owns one of the IPL teams. Tracy Giles, who's one of the top people in training mental fortitude in the army. Baroness Sue Campbell, who's involved in all these different Olympic sports.
Mm-hmm.
And Stuart Lancaster, rugby coach.
Yeah.
Dave Brailsford, a cycling coach. And some of the press were saying, how on earth is this group of people going to help Gareth? They don't know as much about football as Tony Pulis. They don't know as much about football as Harry Redknapp. And I thought, actually, that's true.
Yeah.
Pulis and Redknapp have forgotten more about football than I will ever know.
Mm.
But then I thought to myself, if Redknapp and Pulis had been advising Southgate, they've been socialised into the basic assumptions of English football, a way of playing, tactics, nutrition, sports. They have the same basic worldview. So they'd just be mirroring each other, parroting. The really eye-opening thing about being part of this group, I'm not saying it's a perfect group by any means,
but
it's been incredible that when Tracy Giles had a perspective on how to prepare for penalty shootouts based on the army preparing for a particular attack in theatre and the mental toughness, and or Dave Brailsford on how big data sets can improve diet, or Stuart Lancaster came up with something fascinating about preparation camps that Gareth Southgate took on board, you suddenly get this cross-pollination of ideas and you get these amazing light bulb moments that would never happen if you had a group of experts who think in the same way.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Matthew Syde is with us in the studio. His latest book, Rebel Ideas, is out now, The Power of Diverse Thinking. And we said, Matthew, a very powerful first chapter in the book, say timely because, of course, it was the anniversary of 9/11 yesterday. And what you're discussing as a concept feeds into what happened on 9/11.
Yeah, there's been a big debate in the intelligence community about why the CIA was unable to spot the Al-Qaeda plot to destroy the Twin Towers and other key strategic targets. And it's typically divided down the lines of those who think the CIA just hired really stupid analysts on the one hand, and those who say actually it's very difficult to detect plots before they materialise.
Mm.
And what I think I've tried to do is look at the structure of the CIA itself. And it turns out that they are very bright individual analysts, you know, incredible rigour in the recruitment process. But it was what we were talking about earlier. We tend to want to hang around with people who think in the same way as us and reflect our own views. And almost all of the analysts at the CIA were white, Protestant, male, West Coast, liberal arts graduates.
Mm.
And you can imagine when you're trying to detect terrorist plots around the world, having lots of smart people who think in exactly the same way and have had the same experiences, you're going to be less likely to detect radicalization, alienation, and the other things that are precursors to these kinds of threats. And in the book, I look at the chronology of what was actually happening on the ground in Afghanistan and beyond, and what the CIA thought was happening. And there's this complete, extraordinary disconnect.
Mm.
And that was a really interesting chapter to write because I interviewed ex-CIA veterans, senior analysts, and it's just a fascinating breakdown in collective intelligence at the what was supposed to be the world's foremost intelligence agency.
You also talk about that many good bosses, successful bosses, are those that are willing to be questioned and confronted right. by the people that work for them. But there's also a story in there when...
It's quite rare, that, though, isn't it?
It is.
I mean, but there is a little piece about an incident with an aeroplane, which right. is a kind of... It feeds into, the extreme opposite of that.
It was the exact opposite. This is a flight going from Denver to Portland in 1978, coming down on final approach, and the pilot pulls the lever to lower the landing gear. You know when you're in the cabin, you hear it zzz, and then yeah. click into place. Mm. But on this occasion, there's a loud bang, the plane veers to the right, and a light that should have illuminated on the dashboard to show that the landing gear is down hasn't illuminated. They don't know if the wheels are down. So the pilot quite sensibly puts the plane into a holding pattern above suburban Portland as they try and troubleshoot the problem. So he sends the engineer into the cabin, and above the wings, two bolts shoot up on this model of aircraft when the wheels are down. Mm. The bolts are up. Great news. So they're like, yeah, probably it's down, but why? So they think, look, just to be double checked, we're going to phone the manufacturers. They phone the manufacturers. They explain what's happened. The manufacturer says, yeah, we think the wheels are down, but we're not 100% sure.
It's not helpful,
and then they're like, okay, well, the pilot now starts looking, why hasn't the light gone? And he starts looking at the wiring, or perhaps it's a faulty bulb. But as they're deliberating over this, the plane is still in the holding pattern, and another safety critical danger has come into play, which is the plane's running out of fuel.
Mm.
Now, the engineer knows the plane is running out of fuel because he can see it going down to zero on the dials right in front of him. He also has a big incentive to tell the pilot that the fuel is running out, because otherwise he will die.
Yes.
Right? And yet, back then in the 1970s, it was very hierarchical. The pilot was the big cheese, the person with the right stuff. The people in the cockpit had to call him sir. And in those circumstances, humans have a very highly attuned state of psychology. If the engineer had said, we're running out of fuel, the implication would have been the pilot didn't already know that. And he didn't want to say that. He didn't want to challenge the pilot directly because of this real hierarchical culture.
Mm.
And so we know from the voice pick, the voice recorder, that what the engineer said is, oh, we're kind of getting low on fuel here. And because the pilot's been insinuated to be the omniscient controller, he's hardly listening. And so he didn't give the pilot the information the pilot needed.
Mm.
The plane crashed on a totally clear day in suburban Portland into woodland. The engineer lost his life.
Wow.
And my argument is, if you're going to have a team, a successful team, people should be able to make a contribution. And bosses who surround themselves with yes men and just want to be told what, people are just telling the boss what he wants to hear rather than what they truly think. The whole team, the brain shrinks to just the dimensions of the boss's brain.
Yeah.
I mean, is there a danger of being too collective, though? Do you not? You can have a lot
of
voices.
Yeah, there is. Yeah.
You have too many voices.
Right.
In the end, somebody has to make the
dead
decision.
Right. I think that's really significant. And you've heard that expression, a camel is a committee, is a horse made by committee. Because you've got so many voices, it just ends up being absolutely useless. So I don't think democracy works in many corporate institutions or many sports teams. You need a decision maker.
Mm.
But the decision maker is going to make wiser judgments if that person, he or she, is listening to the different people. Why have the team? Why have a leadership team? Why have people in that room if you're not going to listen? So I think you're right, Andy. You don't want to have pure democracy, and co-leadership tends to break down because there's confusion over who's in charge. But I think decision making's improved, and it can be quick when you have that cognitive diversity.
I mean, we talked about a plane crash there and 9/11, but there's different aspects that you've touched on as well, even down to the kind of Gucci Prada battle and how one won out over the other.
Yeah, so this is something that's coming in a little bit now. The three of us, same kind of age.
Mm-hmm.
Fair to say? Andy's a bit older, right?
Ish, yeah,
Andy's
about
10 years older.
How can you tell?
Yeah. When I come in here and we start talking to each other, we're talking about families and we're talking about kids.
Mm, yeah.
And we've got sort of similar worldviews because we grew up at the same time, same era. And what a lot of companies have done is they've given senior executive boards access to what they call shadow boards, which is a group of much younger people in the company who have a completely different perspective on digital technology and social networks and what their demographic is talking about. And this made a huge difference to the success of Gucci, because they were getting access to these ideas that they would otherwise not have had.
Yeah.
Because all of us are a bit limited, right? Mm. We all have horizons.
No,
we all have blind spots.
This show, the young guys in the meeting will say something, you think, oh, I hadn't thought of that at
exactly.
all.
Yeah,
they
exactly.
have a completely different view, a different take on virtually everything.
Yeah. And that's why I think, if you can find those people who might give you that bit of information that you would otherwise lack. You have a room of people who have those insights. What an incredible uplift you get in the ability to come up with good ideas for the show, or to detect the terrorist plot, or to land a plane safely.
Yeah. Do you think then things are changing? Clearly, are there still lots of very big businesses that we would be surprised to think that have got closed minds still to this?
I think there is incredible lack. I think there's a lot of box ticking. People think they have diverse teams, but who think in exactly the same way, who have been at a company for 25 years, they have the same assumptions, and they're about to get really radically disrupted. So I think it is a problem. Look at senior leadership teams in the army, or in the civil service, in government, in the law. It's incredibly homogenous. Mm. I think that can be... I mean, the poll tax is a good example. You guys remember the poll tax.
Yes, listeners, yeah. I think Andy remembers the first time around.
What, 1380?
Of course not.
But this was a policy that went disastrously wrong. Mm. And then you look at the people who came up with the policy. The head of the review team, which, remember, William Waldegrave?
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
Waldegrave was the son of Viscount Chewton, lived in Chewton Lodge. And, you know, the first time his mother ever saw a black person on the grounds, thought that it was a terrorist, and got the guard and strimmer to confront him, realised that this person had just helped William, had fallen off his bike. They were totally... William Waldegrave in his book says, we never played with kids from the local school. Our neighbours were the haberdashers, or the bishop at Bath in Wells.
Yeah.
And they went on to holiday. And these, and then the environment secretaries during the poll tax were all private school educated, high fee paying, and then Oxbridge. And then you wonder why they failed to understand that older people would struggle to find the cash to pay this tax. Nicholas Ridley said, oh, can't they sell a painting?
It's let them eat cake, isn't it, really?
Yeah, exactly.
It's totally amazing.
Totally detached.
Yeah.
And so that example, I think, is indicative of a broader problem of highly homogeneous groups who think in the same way and are missing the big picture.
Yeah, good stuff. Well, it's fascinating stuff as always, Matthew. So we do recommend it. Out now in hardback.
Yes.
It's called Rebel Ideas, The Power of Diverse Thinking by Matthew Syed. And yeah, go out and get your copy now. Lovely to see you as
Lovely
always.
Lovely to be in. Thank
Thanks
you
very
guys.
Much for coming in.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
The Arsenal dressing room, honestly, they are fantastic. Some of the stuff they come out with.
Oh, yeah.
This is Bernd Leno, the latest one.
Hmm.
He's saying that Arsenal are the biggest team in London. You can't compare the teams. Arsenal is the world club. The club here in London. Not Chelsea, not Tottenham. Arsenal is the club here with fans. You think, what are you talking about? A, that's not right. All three clubs are pretty big. And also, have a look at the trophy cabinet for the last 15 years, mate.
But I mean, I can't join in on that conversation. But
no wonder they never win anything.
If you are playing for a team, you know, you're there on international duty or whatever, you talk up your team, don't you? I mean, you know, it's just what you do. You don't talk them down, do you?
Well, I don't know. I've just realised my notes have... The way that, because we've got a new producer this week, our producer on holiday, he prints my notes on both sides of the paper. So
can you not operate like that?
Well, I can, but I was thinking, where have half my things gone?
Well, a lot of the kids are very green. You know, they go double sided, they want to save trees. You don't care, Andy, you chop them all down.
Wayne Rooney was in a karaoke bar,
an
onlooker who doesn't exist in any shape or form commented on the quality of his singing.
Yeah, he said he was quite good.
He said, yeah, he was far from the worst. Said this on.
That's high praise indeed.
Yes, it's tremendous, yeah. Isn't it? Well done to him.
Do you see Mike Riley as the referee's boss has been off to the Premier League today to have a chat about how VAR's been going so far. And the feeling is they've made four mistakes this season. Only four mistakes have been made so far this season.
Well, that's fair enough, isn't it?
And the Sebastian Haller one being one of the worst. And I think that is fair because it was very difficult. I mean, watching Match of the Day that night, you're thinking, oh, come on, that's a penalty.
Oh, it was a
really
penalty.
Is a penalty.
Absolutely.
And
a penalty.
You could not see any reason why. It looked like a penalty in real time.
It was the one that made them think that the referee must go and re-examine it. Because I think, I can't remember who the ref was, but if he'd gone and looked at it, he would have thought, oh, no, that is a penalty.
Other ones he said is Tielemans should have got a red for the tackle on Callum Wilson.
Yeah.
Apparently, the reports are that the penalty incidents involving David Silva for City against Bournemouth, as we said, the Alla one as well, that was a mistake. So, I mean, they are fronting up.
They're fronting up, and no problem.
And also, there's been some talk of a move to let the guys go and look at the monitors should they want to. I think he's slightly loosened up on
the idea. It makes sense. I'm glad the fact that they're flexible, because there's nothing worse than sort of saying it's going to be this and then it can't change for another season.
Yeah.
It's better if it's flexible. They'll get it more right if they do that.
Fabian Scher was the one that hit his hand, because after what happened in the City game as well against Spurs, that did seem very unfair.
That was a mistake. Definitely. Do you want a pointless poll from Gala Bingo? I don't know why they brought this one out.
Well, it's paid off. You just give them a mention now.
Roast potatoes have been voted the favourite type of cooked spud to eat. You can't say potatoes twice.
No.
Chips came fourth, and you think, well, what about who came second or third? But it was, in fact, mash. Came second.
Mash came second?
Yeah, jacket potato third.
Jacket potato third. Chips
I can't
fourth.
Believe it. What poll would jacket potato come ahead of chips?
08717 22 33 4. I would have thought...
Honestly.
I would have gone... So what was the winner, did you say?
Winner roast potatoes.
Winner roast potato.
Second mash. Third, jacket potato.
Jacket potato. Fourth,
not even on the podium.
Is it chips. A top 10? I mean, aren't you struggling after that, unless you're a bit posh?
Dauphinoise.
Was that
fifth? Number eight. No idea.
So what was, like, 25th? Oh, yeah, you know your stuff. You're a bit of a spud king, you are, aren't you? Now, I wasn't aware of this. Apparently, there was a story. I even looked it up, but to be honest, I couldn't find out anything more about it, which made me a touch sceptical. People increasingly want comedy funerals, say a company in Carlisle.
Do they?
Whose jobs have included...
It's not Gala Bingo.
No, whose jobs have included coffins and the flowers spelling out the word... Well, I can't say. It begins with B and ends with D. But that, it's a swear word, yeah. But that's a League of Gentlemen gag. It was in the League of Gentlemen years ago. So it's a kind of copy of that. But it struck me, you know, you've got all these travelling shows. They do like the play that goes wrong, don't they? Have you seen this? Or the murder mystery that goes wrong? Or the what's it? Have you not seen them? They're in the West End all the time, Andy.
I haven't seen that.
They are the what's gone wrong sort of franchise.
Oh, really?
You've not seen those?
No.
But they're supposed to be very entertaining.
I live in a very closed way. I don't see these things.
Well, you don't see what's on in the West End?
No.
Okay. So, anyway, I suppose they could come in and do the funeral that went wrong.
Okay.
And if you were someone who liked to laugh and you thought the best way for your friends to kind of leave, the church that day or wherever, with a smile on their face, maybe because they dropped your coffin or the vicar got your name wrong.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? I think... So what? You know, if you wanted everybody to remember you like that, I don't see it as a bad thing, do you?
Well, it's not a bad thing. It's up to you, isn't it? It's
okay.
Entirely.
So there we are,
decision.
A little free idea for the that goes wrong franchise, funerals. I mean, I imagine it's limited.
That's true. China's richest man, Jack Ma, has retired. Did you see that? I met him once. I had to ask him to stop staring at me.
I knew that was coming. That's a song from what? About 1962, is it? Really?
It's an old favourite, though.
No, Mr. Zeitgeist.
Do you see that story where a bloke discovered... I'm not doubting the guy, because I'm sure it's true, but it would be a very easy thing to fake. He basically claimed that he opened a packet of Watsits, and there was only one Watsit in there.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the stop? You say, I could say, oh, yeah, I bought a Kit Kat, and there was only biscuit in there. No, I could have spent the whole time shaving off the chocolate.
You got a lot of time on your hands. You ever tried to shave?
Well, you get in the paper.
You ever tried to shave the chocolate off a Kit Kat?
That's a very poor example.
You do not have the skills to do that. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I can say I bought a bag of Revels.
I love the fact he hasn't given these any thought. They're going to get more ridiculous. You bought a bag of Revels, and what was in it?
There's only one Revel in it.
And okay. Say, well, you know, which one?
I don't know. I haven't had a bag of
Was
Revels
it the toffee?
Is there a Turkish delight?
You probably had one last time you were in the West End watching a play. Yeah.
I don't know. I can't remember.
So you could do, Andy, but I mean, what's in it for you? What's in it for you apart from
a bit of press?
I found one Watsit. So just a big bag of air with one Watsit in it, was
that's,
it?
That's true. That's what he said. I am. And talking of vegetables, as we were with the potato.
It seems like a lifetime ago.
Good luck to Peter Glazebrook.
Oh, yeah, we'll be chatting to him.
Yeah. He's the world record holder, or used to. He's been overtaken now.
Has he really?
For the heaviest onion.
Yeah, he grows lots of giant veg.
Yeah,
it's tomorrow
does.
In Harrogate. That's where it
That's
all kicks
right,
off.
The giant vegetable contest in Harrogate, the home of giant vegetables.
During an international week, we regard that as sport, but now it's finished. We may struggle to get it in.
That's true. That would be difficult. That's a good point.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
There we are. That was this afternoon's show. We'll return tomorrow. Martin Kellner will join us with a week of sport on TV. We'll have, I've got a big night of rugby league tomorrow. I'll be reflecting that. And also the clips of the week. So until then, thanks for downloading us.
You've been listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Hear the guys every weekday between 1 and 4 p.m. on TalkSport.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.